This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
All right. Y'all now coming in with all your hard-headed stuff, and I feel like this is going to be a thing. We're just going to have to bring this back later on in the show. From the 713, hard-headed about always buying extra seating at the movie theater for a buffer zone. Oh, y'all missed a money bucks over here. Damn. Or Miss Money Bucks. I don't know who that is. Somebody said that they're hard-headed about giving praise to people for no reason, telling someone they can sing when they can't.
Ooh.
They're like, I refuse. That okay, you're hard-headed about, I will always tell the truth no matter what.
Yeah, that's awful.
Which, I'm not saying this about you personally, dear listener, but I feel like a lot of people who are like, I'm just a truth teller, oftentimes are, I am a jerk because I don't want to consider people's feelings.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm the total opposite.
You will lie just to avoid hurting people's feelings?
Yeah, I'd never want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Oh, by the way, B. Scott's here.
Hey, that was one of the worst things in the world, though, back in the day. I don't know if y'all remember this. Like, in school, there would be somebody that would sing a lot that thought they could sing better than they could.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, oh, there goes singing so-and-so again. and they were probably a little bit better than like somebody that couldn't sing at all, but they weren't good enough to just be singing all the time. Mm-hmm. I had a few of those. It's like, oh man, nobody has the heart to tell them that don't nobody want to hear you singing all the time.
Well, it depends. Well, you said in school, man, in school they will tell you because kids are not good people. I've often said this.
Yeah, that's true. Like,
hey, cut that out.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, man, why is you singing?
I'm sure you have a thing or two or ten that you're hard-headed about.
Paying the park, man. It's not that I refuse, because I will pay, but I will first try to find all the ways in which I do not have to. Like, I will try to find all the workarounds until I finally settle on, okay, we're going to pay this $30, hopefully not more, you know. But if I can find a free way to park, I will always try to find, oh, over there is cool.
Yeah.
Oh, on the side of the street right there. And I will walk.
Yeah.
I will walk. And that's probably part of it, too, is that I can still walk. I'm still in good enough shape to walk. But I refuse to just concede the parking pavement.
I'm kind of like you, except I will also then let the fear and the concern go to a different level, which is, all right, but what happened if this thing get towed?
Yeah.
Right? Like that. Then I get to that space where I'm like,
ooh. I'm accountable. I'm accountable. I've been there. I've been there before.
Yeah. I still have a perfect record in that regard, and I want to keep that zero in that instance.
I've only been towed, I think, twice in my life.
Mm-hmm.
In all of the times where I've gone in these parking kind of excursions, I've only been towed twice in my life. And it's been a while. It's been at least 10, 12 years since I've been told.
I'm proud of you.
And I'm literally wearing something that I'm hard-headed about.
Ah.
I'm wearing the Wilt Chamberlain Philadelphia 76ers 13 t-shirt. And I will go to my grave. If you're talking about the greatest player in the history of basketball, Wilt has to be in the discussion with Michael Jordan and LeBron James. Period. Period.
The spirit of Bill Russell might have something to say about that.
He wasn't better than Will.
I didn't want to go there because I knew he would start there.
I understand that.
Individually,
he was not better than Will. But the issue was that Wilt always had to go up against Russell, always had to go up against his Celtics. And when we think about the greatest of all time, we don't usually think about them not being able to overcome a team throughout the entirety of their career.
Well, LeBron hadn't won as many titles as Michael.
So around the NFL,
we see we got some hard-headed mofos up in here.
Brother, I was like, that's just going to be the segment now if I don't start here.
What I got from that segment was Wilt couldn't get past the Celtics.
Hey, he's got a couple. Don't antagonize him. I don't want to deal with that right now.
Hey, we giving LeBron a hard time.
So I failed to mention
anywho.
The city of Washington, Washington, D.C., will host the 2027 draft as announced by the president of the United States. I was like, oh, okay, this is how this is happening.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah, okay. They're going to host next year's draft, and it'll be at the National Mall, which
that's awesome.
Look, I have been hard-headed as well about, like, hey, this draft going on the road, it feels kind of weird to me. People have continued to show out, which in my face. And this is the one where I go, okay, that feels like that.
Yeah,
cool. That does feel like that'd be cool.
That's going to be very cool.
Yeah, you can sign me up for D.C., period. I mean, nothing against Green Bay, but any big event in D.C., much less the draft, I'm here for it. So, I mean, not a lot of notes on this. Like, sign me up if I was somebody that was either going to be covering it or if, you know, my team, like, you know, the Texans right now, to me, going to the draft, I don't know. You know, like, they're picking later in the draft. Sometimes they're not picking in the first round at all.
Yeah. And it got you on the yo-yo.
We should try to go, man.
But I mean, sweet. If I had a little bit more interest or if I had a little bit more reason to be there, you could absolutely sign me up for this.
Okay. That's interesting. Another thing that was announced in that kind of White House time period was that the White House is seeking to cut funding on brain injury research. Like, this was like the less fun, right? The fun is like, hey, DC, you're gonna host the draft. So the Trump administration, in their 2026 fiscal budget request to the Congress, is eliminating major federal funding for traumatic brain injury research, which obviously matters a great deal when you talk about football in particular, and, you know, the ways in which we've grown to understand more about what's happening with brains, with you know, that kind of traumatic sport that is football and others, right? Soccer also falls in with kind of the head injuries that happen, and also with the you know, kind of repeated head usage. But this CDC is facing a $3.5 billion in budget cuts and everything. And according to Dr. Owen Perlman, who is a brain injury specialist and board member for the Brain Injury Association of America, he said the budget cuts would roll back decades of progress. Entirely unsurprisingly, Roger Goodell, commissioner of the NFL, refused to comment on such things. This definitely, I don't know necessarily. I've been trying to think about how I think this would affect the NFL, and I don't know how it would. This feels like it more affects like the lower levels of football. And I do wonder if the NFL maybe would be more comfortable because they've already gotten their concussion settlement when it comes to, you know, the players that have previously played, because that's under the guise that those players did not know the risks. Now, I guess you could legally make an argument that these players know the risk. It just feels like the players coming into the NFL are more likely to have injuries and stuff and brain things that they don't have a good understanding of, because it feels like as a nation, we're not going to research it nearly as much.
Yeah, I don't know what position the NFL is going to take on this, but this is pretty consistent with what we've seen across the board with the administration. I mean, they've cutting funding to programs that they consider either unnecessary or like, and I think this kind of gets into political waters, but something that they might consider specifically like woke or liberal. And some of what the NFL has done, not just, you know, with Black Lives Matter, but even with the concussion stuff, I think they can kind of position that as like, hey, this is not of like our political sort of leaning. This to me is just pretty consistent with what they've been doing. Whether you agree with it or not, this is pretty on brand and unsurprising. I mean, just read the news and look across the board. They are cutting funding to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So to damn near everything. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this just kind of falls in line.
Right. And I wanted to keep it relatively apolitical, but I think the point is worth making.
Yeah.
Among the items that are targeted, heads up, concussion prevention program for youth and high school coaches, and those types of things. So that's the thing that got me concerned, especially, and I'm interested in how like parents, especially of young children, feel about this, knowing that, you know, some of the protections that have seemingly been put in place around, you know, to help the people that bring up the kids in these spaces to be best prepared to help these kids get involved with a sport that means a lot to our cultural zeitgeist, but make it as healthy as possible. Some of those things being peeled away. I wonder how like parents feel about that in particular, because that's huge. Like, this is
that's the thing.
We you can't we've opened Pandora's box on knowing the dangers of this. We can't just go back to the 90s where we're like, it's probably fine. You got helmets on. That's like, where we know it's there.
That's what would bother me. And it's like the whole concept of, you'll be all right. Come on, man. You'll be all right.
Not to get too negative here, but like,
I did it. I'll take the responsibility.
In my experience, though, like parents, obviously the education is there. The literature is there. There's more opportunities to know. But my experience is that the parents that are still letting their kids play football and that are still in the football aren't really that into this information. Like, I'm not trying to put a wide enough net or, you know, just blanket statement, but I just haven't seen as much of that concern of, hey, I need to know more about it. Like, if you're into football, it's kind of like I am not so sure how much this literature and education is being used.
Yeah.
Right, but I think
I'd be curious to know, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
but some of the
like, what's the Venn diagram of,
right?
Yeah.
You know, the like what you're talking about and the people that actually utilize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. I think some of it is just like the apparatus for, you know, instruction of coaches and like finding out what's the best practices that we then implement. I think those are the things that my mind immediately goes
We can
to.
Agree.
Yeah.
This is not good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we can agree on that.
That's the easy part of this, is just not good.
This is not good. No. I think that we could say that with a certain level of confidence.
Yeah.
Not a good thing.
No. So I don't know how this filters up to the NFL level of things, and I think that there is a question of why don't the owners pay for that research, and that is a whole different conversation think that there should be probably some level of like a societal good in, hey, also being a part of this. But yeah, it feels like, and again, this is going to wander into waters that I don't necessarily know I want to go into, but it feels like, hey, as a society, understanding better ideas of what is and is not good practices is probably like a larger benefit for all of us, which is why we all put in.
What I'm trying to say here is I wish we all cared more.
Yes.
I really do. I wish the owner, like to every point that you've made, honestly, Reggie, from the owners to parents, like I wish that this was something that we as a society seem to care more. There are certain things that we just kind of embrace and agree on.
Yeah.
And this is not, for whatever reason, has not become one of them. Like brain research. Like, come on.
Yeah. Just your brain, you'll be fine.
We're going to play a collision sport where we have to wear helmets.
Yeah.
But we don't necessarily embrace brain research.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah. Some other things that have happened around the NFL. Ravens designating Justin Tucker as a post-June 1 cut, according to NBC Sports. Remember that they drafted a sixth-round kicker, Tyler Loop.
Yeah.
And so remember yesterday we were hearing from John Harbaugh talking about this as, you know, this
football-related.
All these decisions would be kind of football-related. And Eric DaCosta, who is the general manager of the Ravens, put out a statement that says sometimes football decisions are incredibly difficult, and this one is one of those instances. Considering our current roster, we have made the tough decision to release Justin Tucker. Justin created many significant and unforgettable memories in Ravens history. His reliability, focus, drive, resilience, and extraordinary talent made him one of the league's best kickers over the decade. We're grateful for Justin's many contributions while playing for the Ravens. We sincerely wish him and his family the best in the next chapter of their lives. Close quote. That is the language that they used. Kind of flowery, I guess. Like, how did you take in the release of Justin Tucker?
That's kind of pretty flowery. Pretty flowery. I don't think it was necessary to kind of to necessarily give him his flowers, given the context. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's key to remember that they are using, it does seem like they're using football reasons to justify this. He wasn't good last year, and you can use football reasons to justify this. So, to me, it stood out that they went out of their way to not only not acknowledge what was going on with him off the field, but to even kind of distance it a little bit or to downplay it or even make light of it. Make light of it might be a little strong, but I feel like by downplaying it, you are making light of it. And by going out of your way to praise him in this way, you are also making light of it.
It's understandable to me how they approached it, but it's also incredibly weak. When you consider what these allegations are and how it might reflect just on Justin Tucker alone as a representative of the organization. It's just weak. But here's an interesting question that Reggie and I were talking about before the show. This is like Deshaun Watson has nothing in terms of pelts on the wall that Justin Tucker has. So how are Baltimore fans going to like remember Justin Tucker? Like, in what stead is he going to be held?
Yeah, it's a complicated legacy.
Yeah.
It's a complicated legacy, but also one that ends with him both not playing well and having these allegations out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing with Deshaun, I think what messed his legacy up too, especially in Houston, him wanting out. He wanted out before the allegations.
Yes.
So I think people slowly turned on him during that time. And now, like, Justin Tucker didn't want out. Yeah. He was just playing bad.
But Deshaun also wanted out and was playing well at that time. Mm-hmm. Right? Like the last time that the Texans fans saw Deshaun Watson actually play for the Texans, he was still a good player. He was their best player, their franchise player. This is a little different where this was your kicker who was great, perhaps the greatest of all time, who wasn't good recently and had all of this other stuff on
top. Yeah, but that greatest of all time potential, I think that makes this interesting because I think Larry and Stafford, when he called in with Payne and Pendergast, made a good point, which is he's like Hall of Fame type dude, whether it's team Hall of Fame or NFL Hall of Fame. Like, how do you then, like, how do you handle the embrace of that on the back end of that? Especially, well, I mean, we know the NFL hasn't come back with the result, or like whoever ultimately is doing the investigations here has not come back with like the fullness of this. Like, let's say that it does come back and you come through and you're like, oh, okay, so we got all the affirmation that we need with all the documentation or whatever. How do you find a way to embrace him? Or do you, kind of let that sit up?
It's an interesting question.
I don't envy them in that regard. And that probably is one of the reasons why they were, hey, we appreciate the football portion of this. We're not going to talk about all that. He can just go and have the rest, good rest of your life.
Yeah. There will be eyes on this because I think it's going to depend in large part on what the result of those investigations are or whatever investigation there is. And then, like, this statement makes you think that they're going to lean toward embracing him. Like, they can do whatever they want, but there will be eyes on this for sure.
Yeah, did they do anything with Ray Rice as far as, like, bringing them back? I know they ain't going to do too much, but did they ever bring them back for, like,
Well, he brought out the team just a couple of years ago, right? He did his dance and all that.
Yeah.
Well, you're thinking
Ray Rice. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with Ray Lewis, because, you know, technically, he beat that charge.
that's right.
So that's one of those court of public opinion things. Yeah, I think that this gets a little interesting if you have actual court of laws.
And it was back in the day.
Well, and Ray Rice to...
Ray Rice to my knowledge.
But Ray Rice also, you know, and you don't have to ever forgive for these types of things, right? But he also did all of the quote-unquote right things after the fact. And we are talking about, look, and I don't want to get too much into their personal business, but we're talking about a one-time incident that we know about, a one-off incident that we know about that was ugly and inexcusable and horrible. But with this Justin Tucker thing, we're talking about a pattern of behavior, multiple accusations. Like, it's a little bit different from both Ray Rice and Ray Lewis, where we're talking about a one-time incident that is adjudicated one way or the other.
Also a pattern of instances where the Baltimore Ravens might have had some level of understanding as to what was happening here,
which
is a little uncomfortable as well. Or, you know, hey, but there you go. That's around the NFL. I will get back around to that particular lawsuit at some point during the program. B. Scott in with us for this hour. Coming up next, speaking of B. Scott being in with us, I want to get to B. Scott's thoughts, and I have a feeling that we're going to be talking about some hoop. All right. Yeah, we'll do that.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
That next. The man is here. His name is B. Scott. He's from Hiram Clark, and I'm interested in his thoughts. B. Scott's thoughts, as we always get on a Tuesday at this time. What you thinking on, brother?
It was not a good feeling watching the Rockets lose in Game 7 the other night, but I do feel like it offered us some clarity, the totality of the series, and really the season overall, and the experience that we've had with the Rockets over these last 2 years. I feel like we were offered some clarity by Game 7. And it's pretty simple, and this is where I'm at, guys. I want to get y'all's thoughts on it.
Okay.
Rockets need a shooting guard. They have all of the capital to go out there and get basically whoever they want that's available. There are a few options out there that it seems like could be out there. The simplest and best option is to trade for Kevin Durant.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockets need to come together with a package centered around Jalen Green and some shrapnel. Maybe Cam Whitmore and a couple other picks. Go out there and get Kevin Durant. Because I think the issue for a lot of people with the Kevin Durant discussion is, oh, well, why would you gut your team for an aging superstar, for an aged superstar, a guy who is far past his prime? And the last few places that he's been, it has not worked out, right? Like, it is actually gone down in flames. And so why would you disrupt what you've got going on to bring in a guy like that who clearly does not impact winning the way that he used to? But my thought on that is it's a very, very, very different situation coming to the Rockets, a team that is built that doesn't have to gut its situation. You do not have to give up a haul for Kevin Durant the way you would have several years ago because he's an aging superstar. And you have a player, a couple of players that you can dangle in front of the Phoenix Suns in addition to their own future, in addition to their own picks, that I think is enticing enough to offer them without having to gut the core of what you have. And I think the clarity, the thing that you learn from the series, is that Jalen Green does not necessarily have to be a part of that core. And it's specifically a position of need that you need to fill. You need better shooting, and you need a more reliable shooting guard. This would help allow you to do that.
I totally agree. I think the other thing that it does, and I'm interested in you guys' thoughts, I think you need to consolidate the roster a little bit. You really have guys that you want to use and are not using. Like they were saying, you know, talking about Reed Sheppard, you know, the best pure scoring option and all this. That dude's just buried on the bench, you know. And what do you think about some of these other guys? I think by bringing in him, maybe Jalen Green going the other way, you're going to open up avenues for players that you like to be able to be a part of things.
Yeah.
My brain went a few different ways because Kix Rocks on the YouTube page saying that KD was just added to a young, talented roster and he did not put the Suns over the top. That Suns roster was not young.
Yeah, is he talking about Bobo? What young?
But even when he was added to it,
that team
was
good.
Yeah, that team was old in order to do it. And I think that's the distinction that you're making here is that he'd be jumping in and you still have a lot of talent. I think the question then also you have to ask, how much do you think is actually reasonable that you would have to give up? Because you still have to match salaries.
Yeah,
I think
that's the complicated part.
Jalen Green has $33 million on his deal. That, I feel like that is one of them, right? But outside of that, who else are you throwing in there? I feel like, you know, maybe you can jettison maybe like a Jock Landale for $8 million in there where you would not feel the pain of that, although you still would need to find some depth centers, which Jock Landale has been good. I want to admit that. Would you be willing to put Jabari Smith Jr. in there?
Yep.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Then that's the thing. Like, I would try to not, but I think that that's a possibility, because you would have to match salaries, and it becomes a numbers game in that sense. But yeah, when you consider the fact that he was also somebody that was underutilized or misutilized.
That's kind of my point.
It's like, okay, well, in theory, no, I wouldn't want to, but in practice, it would make sense because he kind of factored out of what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Like, Kevin Durant would factor, I think, in a major way into both what you're doing offensively and give you some length on the defensive end of the floor. I know he's not, you know, nearly the defender that he was necessarily when he was in Golden State, but you're doing some things with Kevin Durant that I think fill the roles that both Jalen Green and Jabari Smith would fill. So, yeah, I would be willing to do it. And I would also point out, too, as Kick Rocks mentioned, I think you got a couple of options that make this – Kevin Durant thing the best one. Like, the fact that you can bring in a player like this and not gut the team, not part ways with either Alperen Şengün or Amen Thompson, and those would be like the young players that I would mention that the Rockets have that the Suns did not have. That's to me what makes it enticing.
Right. The Suns then, they, you know, Kicks Rocks going back and forth talking about Booker was not old. Mikal Bridges was sent in that trade in order to acquire him.
Exactly.
And then beyond that, that was a roster that didn't have much, right? Beyond that. Like, they were pretty thin.
It was Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and then eventually it was Bradley Beal, but they basically had nothing else.
Yeah, they were very thin compared to what the Rockets would be if they made these deals. Now, the question that I have when you start trading for these stars is, like, what is left over? And one of the things that I think about, and this is actually kind of aside from the actual situation of a Kevin Durant or whoever else, can you retain Steven Adams' services? Because Steven Adams has been a very serviceable big. I know that you've had to manage his minutes or what have you, but there are some teams out here that need center help that I think would be willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
Do you think that you'd be able to retain his services?
So Steven Adams becomes a secondary conversation, because that to me is more in lines of the run it back kind of theory. Like, you prioritize paying Steven Adams, you prioritize, obviously, I would say they're either going to pick up the option on Fred VanVleet or restructure that deal. So those become the priorities, retaining the guys that and or restructuring the deals with the guys that you already have, whether it be Steven Adams and Fred VanVleet. I mean, those are the two names to circle in-house for the guys. But if you're talking about bringing in Kevin Durant, I think the conversation becomes different, and you're talking about just perhaps letting go of Steven Adams.
So
maybe not retaining Steven
Adams. What then are you looking at center-wise? Because obviously you have Alperen Şengün, but after that.
Yeah, no, I think, honestly, after that, I'm not as concerned. I mean, that's a secondary question that I feel like you answer, but now you don't have the same, hey, double big. You talk about do you still have Jabari Smith Jr. as a possibility, as a stretch five. Like, I think that's the part that you figure out on the back end and worry about it later, and absolutely just bring in Kevin Durant.
I think part of it is, you know, they were so good rebounding, offensive rebounding, and defensively, it masked just how bad they were. I mean, we talk about how bad their half-court offense is, but just offense in general. You know, that was weak. I mean, just offense in general was weak. You've got to get some sort of scorer, whether it's, Kevin Durant or whomever, or even another one on top of that. And that's where I go with Sean Pendergast is just adamant. Fred VanVleet is going to be your guard.
I'm with him.
He's going to be, and you're with him.
Yeah.
That's $44 million. Man.
Maybe.
Maybe. It could also be 30.
Yeah.
Like, it could be 35.
Yeah.
They could restructure that deal, bring the number down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Keep Fred VanVleet and then still do all of these other things that I'm talking. Like, I do think, like, I've already just accepted Fred VanVleet is going to be here one way or another, whether it's them picking up that option or restructuring the deal. If they pick up the option, that makes it a little bit more interesting because, obviously, you know, that changes the timeline on when you could possibly trade him. And I also don't really think that they're going to trade him anyway. So I've kind of just accepted the fact that Fred VanVleet is going to be here. But I do want to point this out and make this real clear about the Kevin Durant thing. Because I feel like people are missing this. Because it's Kevin Durant, you feel like you're bringing him in, and now he's the guy on your team. That's the guy that's going to lead you to a championship. I'm talking about putting him in that Jalen Green role where it's still Alperen Şengün. It's still Amen Thompson and his ascension. And Kevin Durant is sort of recast in a bit of a way, like in a different.
Good luck with that. Because Kevin Durant is going to want the ball and want to be able to.
And listen, to some degree, one of the things that I will actually put up as a criticism of Kevin Durant as star player in the league is that at times it felt like he has not demanded the ball enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, but I think he'll get the ball. Like, just like Jalen Green got the ball and he didn't know what to do with it. Like, he'll get the ball plenty, but I don't think it'll be the way it was in Brooklyn where Kevin Durant is the guy on the team, the way it was in Phoenix, the way he is the guy on the team. He went to Golden State and became the guy on a team that had Steph on it already.
Yeah.
He's coming here, and I think Alperen Şengün and Amen Thompson are still the guys. And Kevin Durant, now in the later years of his career, we're all taking it in context, right? He's 37 years old. It's not the same as it was back then. You put him in his proper context and in his proper role, and I think it can work.
And there's a lot of people on the text line who have talked about the other options, and I do want to have a conversation about what other options might be there, because I know there's a lot of people, why go get an old guy if you have all this capital and you can get another guy? I think that's one of the things that we sat under with Daryl Morey. Daryl Morey was like keep your powder dry until that big star comes free, but the problem is you are then at the beck and call of whatever team ultimately makes a star in the realm that you want available. And Devin Booker is one of those names that I would love it. Yeah. I just don't think he becomes available.
Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell is another name that's thought of. I don't think he becomes available.
Right.
So I think that's why you have to look at what's actually tangibly there, especially with the timeline that you have. Are you striking while the iron's hot here for a guy? And I'm not even necessarily saying that I'm locked in on Kevin Durant, but even if you're looking in that space, I think that's what you have to keep in mind.
Well, and the other side of that, the big part with getting a bigger fish. I'm interested in having those conversations, but that includes, you talk about what are you giving up and what is the cost of doing business.
That's now, a real teardown.
Now you're having a much different conversation about uprooting what you started, rebuilding or tearing apart the core. And we can have that conversation. Like, if you want to get rid of Şengün for Giannis, let's talk about that. But now you're talking about a much different thing. This, to me, requires the least amount of disruption, but also gives you the upgrade that you're talking about, the upgrade that you need without doing all that other stuff.
All right, Kicks Rocks, you're doing the Josh Allen thing to me now. No one thought Luka was available either. Are we gonna pretend like we're gonna that is now the status quo? No, that was an anomaly that happened once, and that dude is being absolutely battered by the NBA world behind it in Nico Harrison. I don't think that becomes
I will say, keep an eye out on Boston, because I think they can't keep all five of those players that they got.
No.
So I would say keep an eye out on that to kind of see maybe Ime could get one of his guys from there. I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk through the potential targets if you are in a place where you're willing to go be aggressive. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But coming up next, let's get into what's popping here. And there was a lot of basketball elsewhere, including we now know who the coach of the year is. We'll talk about that more next. All right, let's get into what's popping here in the loop on this Tuesday. We got B. Scott in tow with us getting the text line riled up, 713-572-4610, on his assertion that it's the KD move for him. It's the KD move for him. So that's what's going on.
That's where I'm at. Come at me, bro.
That's right. Part of that is the relationship that he has with Ime Udoka and the respect that he already has. That's one of the things that you'll hear talked about with the potential of a move for Kevin Durant. And unfortunately, that's not going to be the coach of the year for this year.
No.
Ime Udoka finishes third. He received the most third place votes, because, you know, it's ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you can receive a whole bunch of second place votes, but also you have some votes here and there that don't go your way where you end up third. No. A lot of people voted him as third. The person who ultimately won this, Kenny Atkinson, who took the Cavs to the next level. When it comes to this season, like, they seem like a team prior who was just kind of really good defensively, but would they have the offense necessary? Kenny Atkinson comes in, and yep, they do. Which, by the way, since Kenny Atkinson's been in the league, I remember the job that he did with the Brooklyn Nets when he was just like, here, you're the guy that gets to handle the toddlers before they actually need to try and win.
Yeah.
And they got him out of there when it was time to
for
Steve Nash.
Yeah. Yep.
And I never liked that deal. And apparently, yeah, he actually can coach in a big way as he's moved a couple of different places and shown it. 59 of the first place votes did go to Kenny Atkinson. J.B. Bickerstaff, obviously former Rockets head coach, now there in Detroit helping those young cats find their level of competition. He gets second place as well. But Ime Udoka getting a level of respect around the league, just not enough to finish as the coach of the year this year.
Yeah, but also want to point out J.B. Bickerstaff, also the guy that Cleveland got rid of for Kenny Atkinson. And so like this worked out basically for everybody but I guess Brooklyn. I mean, look around, bro. Kenny Atkinson is up here getting the coach of the year.
Yeah.
Steve Nash is just being announced as an analyst for Amazon. and meanwhile, look at Cleveland. They got Kenny Atkinson. They fired a guy who, what did he do? Just immediately rebound and go get a job elsewhere and become the runner-up to the guy that you replaced him with. Like, this is really good for them. And, of course, Ime Udoka, I think this is one that I think is just right. You know, one, two, three. This would be one voting, award voting that I would agree with wholeheartedly in terms of how it played out. One, two, three. I think they got this perfectly right, given the job that Kenny Atkinson did with the Cleveland Cavaliers this year.
No, I agree. Because what he did, you know, taking them to that level is more of an immediate thing. Like people see it and they see the record and they see what they're doing. And it's like almost a no-brainer. But the turnaround was incredible for Ime.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the turnaround and really in back-to-back years. Like if somehow it was coach of the last 2 years, like coach of the year's award, Ime Udoka would absolutely get that because they had the biggest turnaround 2 years ago, and then obviously were one of the surprises of the league this year. Yeah. I will say it was a little awkward watching Kenny Atkinson do that interview yesterday with TNT, you know, knowing that the Pacers had just walked him down the day before. And I'm like, yeah, he's the coach of the year, but it feels off right here in the moment, but absolutely did a great job.
Yeah, literally all three of the coach of the year, top three coach of the year candidates lost in the first round there
lost in the first round or just coming off a loss.
Right, exactly. How did you feel about Ime Udoka just with this series? We didn't get a chance to ask you about that as well. And we've kind of talked about it. I know that I'm a poke at you here, Lopez. You called him elite. And I wasn't willing to get to that place. And one of those things was I'm still wanting to see what's happening with his coaching staff and offense. But what was your kind of assessment of how he looked as a coach in this series? Not his first by any means, but his first with this Rockets team.
Yeah, I thought there were some hiccups. Like overall, I would say big picture view, just the fact that they didn't have an offense. Beyond the fact that Jalen Green did not show up in a way that you would expect him to or want him to for the role that he plays. I think overall, and we talk about this all the time, them not really having much of an offensive identity or really doing much on offense other than, hey, let's just dump it to Şengün or, hey, we'll run a pick and roll here or there.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you just got guys standing around and watching. The ball's not moving. Guys aren't moving. And that was a theme, I thought, throughout the season, and it was obviously a theme in this series. That was an issue. The Jabari Smith Jr. piece, not figuring out a way to either get him on the floor and then when he was on the floor to get him the ball. More like because we did see it a time or two and we're like, hey, do that another time or two, if you will. And he wouldn't. So I thought there were some demerits. But overall, I would say it's hard to really have a lot of gripes with the job that Ime Udoka has done because you don't really get here without his leadership.
And part of it is also I still think he's an elite coach. I mean, look at what he's done. You mentioned it the last 2 years. That is an elite job with a team that was going nowhere offensively. Yes, that has been his blind spot. Go back to Boston and everything else. That's been called a blind spot. But here, I mean, how much of it is personnel? You know, we saw what Jalen Green was in the postseason, and that was lost. And they don't have a shot creator.
Yeah.
You know, that's integral. That tends to be pretty important in a half-court offense.
And I don't want to be the fence rider in y'all's debate here on whether he's an elite coach, but I think you can be elite and yet not flawless. Like elite flawed.
Certainly,
so like I think both things can be true where he's an elite coach, but he also has, I think, a clear blind spot. Yeah. And to his credit, we could have done a better job as press in asking follow-up questions on this, but he did admit that they could all be better, coaches included. That was that was mentioned in his post game, and it stood out to me at the time, and we didn't really follow up with it. But I'd be interested to know what he thinks about that, like how they could be better as a coaching staff, because they certainly could be better, even if you'll admit that the job that he has done over the last 2 years is an elite one.
Right. I mean, one of the nitpicking things that I might think that he has some level of insight into is just utilizing your challenges at the right point.
Like, yes.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, he had that challenge on the out of bounds.
And he knew it immediately, too.
Well, and it wasn't really – I didn't feel like it was particularly close.
There's that one. Don't forget the foul or the one that they were looking for with Alperen Şengün.
Oh, yes.
The block. Like, there was a number of them in that series where I go, ooh, you're using this here? Especially, early on in the game as well.
Yeah, and that's a Udoka thing and a staff thing, right? Because he's the one who that decision lies at his feet.
He turns right to
him.
Yeah.
But he turns right to them, and he's relying on their insight and expertise and them watching the replay. And so together – you know, as a whole, like they got to all wear that as a staff,
certainly.
You know, so like that, I mean, that's one, how they use challenges is something they could certainly get better at.
Yeah, that was, and of course, I want to recognize as I'm the low man on the totem pole when it comes to like belief in Ime, I still have quite a bit of it. Like I still have quite a bit of respect for what he does. And I mean, I'm just amazed that he was able to take a zone with two bigs on the floor, match it up against a shooting team and make it work for a period of time. I was impressed. Yeah. Thoroughly by that. All right, some other things that are popping. You mentioned some of the other things that are happening as the basketball playoffs continue, and I won't hit this too hard, but hey, the games yesterday.
Yeah, kind of lit.
Yeah, they were very lit, especially when you talk about comebacks in both of the circumstances. The Knicks pulled out a comeback where they were down as many as 20 points over Boston or from Boston, and they won 108-105. The Celtics missed 45 three-pointers in this game, and man, that what a wild game that was for Boston to get a victory. Or sorry, for the Knicks to get a victory over Boston and kind of make a statement against a team that I don't know that many people were giving them a lot of credit for.
Yeah, so I had to catch up on this game in the middle of the night because I fell asleep at half. I'm gonna tell you exactly how this played out for me. The last thing I remember, and I did watch the later game, okay? Mm-hmm. So I saw Aaron Gordon and all of that. But the last thing I remember from Knicks Celtics was halftime. Charles Barkley saying, they ain't got enough to beat these guys. Talking about the Knicks against the Celtics. They cannot beat these guys.
Well, they hadn't won.
Well, and they hadn't won. It was halftime, and the Celtics looked like they were going to pretty much handle business. Mm-hmm. And that was the last thing I remembered. And then, of course, I watched the later game, and I'm catching up on social media and realizing, oh, they actually did, in fact, win that game. And so I catch up and see how they missed all of these threes and how it goes south for them. And they literally shot themselves out of the game. Like, that used to be a thing they talk about before. I feel like in basketball, we just accepted three was more than two. We say, hey, man, you shoot all them threes, you're going to shoot yourself out the game. Nobody actually thinks that way anymore because, you know, you're hunting those shots. But they literally shot themselves out of the game, you know, and it was just kind of an amazing thing to see the Celtics, a historically great three-point shooting team, shoot themselves out of the game like this.
So there's that one, and then the later game, as you're mentioning, where the Oklahoma City Thunder looked like they had a pretty good commanding lead, looked like they were going to get it done, but Nikola Jokic did the thing that he does, being the world's best player. He joins Wilt, the man who's on Lopez's shirt right now.
Watch Giannis, out, Wilt.
Giannis and Shaq as the only players to tally 40 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists in a playoff game, and en route, to a 121-119 victory there in
Just
Oklahoma City.
Real quick side note. How often do you see these, like, he's one of three players, he's one of four players to ever have done fill in the blank, and Wilt is one of those guys?
Yeah. Oh, here he go.
How often do you hear
I didn't realize I was opening up this door. Yeah. My bad.
No.
And it was funny, too, because I was poking at him earlier. Yeah. I actually agree with him on his point about Wilt. Like, what are we arguing about here? Wilt Chamberlain, great. All time?
Yes.
Up there?
But like when you see these stories periodically, it's like, you know, Shaq, Kareem, Wilt, you know, Jordan, Bird, Wilt, so-and-so, Wilt.
Well, the Joker about to take him off that list.
Yeah.
Get your ass out of here.
But how about Denver, though? Like, honestly, like, they look like they were punting on the season in a lot of ways when they fired Mike Malone. It's like, oh, man, are y'all giving up?
Yeah.
And they go out there and they win in seven against the Clippers. Then on short rest, in comparison, obviously, to the Thunder, go to Oklahoma City and then come from behind to win this game. And then even that sequence, missing the free throws, getting the ball, and Russell Westbrook making the right play at the end.
Yes.
Instead of trying to make a play in traffic, finding Everybody Aaron Gordon for the corner three.
No.
And then Aaron, I know this wasn't a buzzer beater, but it felt like one, right? Yeah. His second game-winning shot. Yeah. Like that, I mean, that was just a hell of a way for that story to play out last night.
Wait, you just mentioned the Russ final play. I want you to hear what it sounded like. This is not the actual broadcast. This is the studio show. This is their behind the scenes of them watching that moment. See if you hear any level of confidence or what their confidence level is in Russ to make the right play.
Go! No.
Oh, geez.
Gordon for three.
No, yes.
That's him in a nutshell.
A lot of Rockets fans will feel that feeling of seeing Russ do that.
Yeah, and that's almost exactly how he described himself, right? Yeah. Like, you know, might make the right play, might make the wrong play, might be good, might be bad, but that's the experience. And of course, and he also mentioned in that same comment, I am a smart player, contrary to what a lot of people like to think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he made the right and obvious basketball play right there. And then Aaron Gordon again, getting his second game-winning shot of the playoffs. Really cool story for them.
And then, again, the Astros fall in Milwaukee to the Brewers. I mean, they had an opportunity with bases loaded and a single out on the board. Did not get runs out of that circumstance. It just feels like the offense for this thing is really rough. This
Two
is
for 14 with
RISP, runners are scoring position.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real problem. This is Joe Espada talking about – he was asked, rather, is it more frustrating or encouraging that the quality at-bats are there, but you're just – one hit away, it seems like.
Yeah, as long as the quality is there, I'm fine. Because I know that we're going to get some big hits. You know, our offense has not gotten hot yet, and we playing 500 baseball. Our pitching is doing a really good job. Our bullpen is doing a really phenomenal job keeping us in game. We just got to be patient and continue to move forward and continue to fight. Because this will turn around. We'll get hot here soon.
You should use Yordan.
Yeah, could use Yordan. Hey, look, at least somebody's optimistic, you know, because it ain't me. Mm-hmm. It ain't me. And maybe that's part of his job. Maybe somebody got to see the glass half full because it's half empty on this side, man. And to their credit, they did turn it around. Lopez, you mentioned this earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. We're creeping up on those dates.
Last couple of days of May into June.
Yeah, and before you know it, that time will be here. Yeah. So we got a few weeks to kind of still do the it's early, hey, it'll be okay kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, as Clint Sterner would say, the rubber going to have to meet the road.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, and I don't want to be comparing this season to last season for very much longer because then we went through last season. I don't think that you really want those roller coasters once again. But he's right. You are playing 500 baseball, three games back of the Mariners right now, which is something that you can make up in a week. But I would love for that optimism to show as actual production because I typically tend to be a process guy, but the process is not. I'm having a hard time continuing to believe in the process with how, I guess, overarching and completely ubiquitous on this team there has been kind of underperformance at the plate while also still getting some really good stuff from your pitching. That's been kind of disconcerting. But there you go. That's what's popping in the loop on this Tuesday. B. Scott, always a pleasure having you in studio, my boy.
I'm going to go be hard-headed about something.
Yeah, you are.
I'll catch y'all later.
Okay, very good. I forgot about the hard-headed. We guys going to have to find a time to bring that back. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, a lot of things are pointing to the Texans maybe playing international games. Where would you rather see the Texans play? Sao Paulo, or would you like to go to Europe? 713-572-4610. We'll talk about that more next.